outside cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Singing songs.
Song, welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Thursday to you. Go tomorrow on the program where we're putting the show together, but we will be joined by State Senator Chris Elliott. So make sure you tune in on Friday. I will have made it a week without being fired. We will celebrate. I am not sure what that will be like, but it'll be a very festive occasion, I assure you. Joining us now on the line, always a pleasure to get this next guest on. He works at the Alabama Policy Institute, a former state senator as well. Phil Williams joins us. Senator, how are you this morning?
Jeff, I'm good. Congratulations on the new show.
Hey, thank you very much. Thank you. It seems like we're just talking just the other day, right? But here we are down in Mobile, Alabama.
Well, good. That's old stomping grounds for me. I lived there for a number of years, went to South Alabama. Both my kids were born down there, so you're in good country right now.
That is reassuring to hear it from you, I promise. Senator, let's get right into it. The Alabama Policy Institute, they issued a position on this mask mandate for school kids. The schools get ready to open back up. The arbitrary designation that everyone from second grade on up must wear a mask in the classroom. Your organization takes issue with that. Talk us through that position, if you would.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate that. Yeah, the Alabama Policy Institute, and I'll say real clear up front, I think I've said this to you before, is we're not opposed to masks. We're not out there saying anti-mask, nobody wear a mask. That's not our position. Our position in this case was one of big government overreach. We felt like this was a decision best left to the superintendents and the principals on the ground who can see their communities, who can see their schools. Because if you have a rural community, let's just choose one. I haven't looked at the stats today. Let's say Greene County or Butler County, where they may have a sort of a low spread of COVID reporting. Why are they being treated the same as Jefferson County? And why are they being treated the same as Madison County? And so all said and done, we look at this as one of those things that should have been left to local leadership to help make a decision. And, you know, I've got friends that are superintendents and principals and teachers, and they know how to spread their desks apart. They know how to take care of things. And we've got to get back to normalcy, and continuing to strip away local leadership is not always good.
I mean, that's kind of the lesson, this one-size-fits-all approach to government. And if we get anything out of this, that government's not very nimble. It's not able to customize a response for everybody, particularly when you have 67 different counties. It seems like just this one blanket approach, we got to give it a shot here. And that is what is kind of going on here with this mandate. As you know, you could probably apply it to the whole mandate, but particularly with the schools.
That you could. And then you look at the mandate, too, and I think you sort of intoned this with your opening, is how did they decide second grade is where the disease is got to be treated with a mask? I mean, if it's infectious among kids, why is it suddenly second grade? Like, you walk into that grade and bam, you're more susceptible. What happened? Were they looking at a maturity level of the first graders or what?
Right, and that's a whole other question, the maturity level. Perhaps there's something to that, but you're putting an imposition on, I think, the teachers to enforce a mandate. We always talking about the mandate statewide right now and what that's going to do to law enforcement, but add to that, try doing that at the school level, at the grade school level in particular. What kind of challenges, what kind of hurdles that presents?
I mean, listen, brother, my kids are grown right now, but I couldn't keep shoes on my second grader when he was that young. So the reality is, telling them to keep a mask on and the teacher having to constantly turn around from the chalkboard or up from the lesson and say, "Little Johnny, put your mask back. Little Johnny, stop pulling Susie's mask." It is going to be an issue, and I recognize that, and I guess they're prepared for it now. But I look at this and think, let the decisions for those type of precautions be made where you can see if they are necessary and not from Montgomery.
But that is, I mean, that's so much of what education policy is. It's very top-down, and then this is no exception to that rule.
Well, it's not. I mean, you're going to get into a whole lot of other stuff with that, because that's why The teachers union hates the idea of a charter school which can operate outside the bounds. That's why they don't like, you know, private schools, because they sometimes are able to do things that they can't do. They want the centralized control and the big government approach, and that's not always going to wind up being the best for the kids.
Does it seem to you, though, that with all of these measures, the goal is to prevent the spread of COVID-19? We're not getting a lot of scientific data. There's some out there to justify some of these measures, but in particular, like you were talking about, the second grade mask mandate. Where is the data? Where is the science that backs this up? Should we expect that, at least until there's maybe you overhaul how we make all these decisions later in a legislative session sometime in the future, but shouldn't we expect a better explanation than what we're getting?
Yeah, I think you know. Okay, first of all, I think if my answer is misinterpreted, let me clarify up front. My answer is not to say that masks don't work. My answer here is to say masks on second grade only, as opposed to first grade. You have to provide a justification for that. And yes, I agree. If there's a science that says second grade is where it kicks in, show us the science. Otherwise, it has nothing more than the appearance of being an arbitrary decision made by a centralized government. And that's never a good idea. And you know, at some point, too, you have to also recognize we can't fix everything with government. I just saw an article on AL.com. Brother, I don't know if you've seen this one or not. The CDC has now warned that drinking hand sanitizer is bad for you. Okay, it took government to advise people that drinking hand sanitizer is bad for you. At some point, there has to be a level of personal responsibility. And so, wow.
But we're learning so much about society and just where that line is, where personal responsibility ends and it's time for government to kick in and take the reins here and decide what's good and what's right and what's best for you. But that line, wherever that line is, wherever that right place, that sweet spot is, it seems to be heading more in the direction of government here lately.
Well, and, you know, the big government advocates right now are jumping all over the coronavirus. Is it real? Yes. Have I known people that have been hospitalized? And I've had friends who've had families that have even been devastated by death. And of course, we've got some public figures in Alabama who have been hospitalized, State Senator Randy Price being one that I can think of right off the top of my head. All that to say, it's real. But at some point, the blanket approach of government is not going to work, because what you're doing is you're crushing society at that point. And yeah, big government. If we allow the big government advocates to say we're the only thing that can help you, then we are denying the fact that we are a free society with people who have a sense of personal responsibility and free markets that are allowed to operate. It's a different situation we're in right now, and it's got to be revised.
Well, here's a question. Once we start getting things back to normal, let's say a vaccine comes along, but how are we going to roll some of this, the force of government within our society, even at the state level? The government now knows they can do X, Y, Z. How do we make sure that this doesn't, you know, that these measures, it's extraordinary times, that it calls for extraordinary actions? How do we start rolling back some of that, take some of that element out of our day-to-day lives?
Yeah, great question. And so here's a couple of things that we're suggesting at the Policy Institute. One of those is there needs to be a sharing of the responsibility with the representative body in the legislature. So now Governor Ivey, we have not disagreed with her largely on the approaches she's taken. She's been fairly measured. But if you look around the nation, like Governor Whitmer in Michigan and Governor Newsom in California, or you got Cuomo and de Blasio both up there in New York, my God. But and the hope would be we never have one of those figures or something like them in Alabama. But if they were, people need to understand all of the decision-making right now that's being made on the pandemic and the shutdowns and all of it is now vested in one person in Alabama law. The governor can declare this, act on it, and make it happen, and your elected officials who are representing your particular communities have. So we need to revise that so that after a period of time, these pandemic shutdowns and mask orders and all that have to require some form of legislative oversight or approval, or at least, you know, some congruence there. And so we advocate for a special session that would allow for a bill that comes in that says, from here on, we're going to be sharing that responsibility. and if I have a moment here, Jeff, I'll throw one more at you. Did anybody even know before this pandemic that Jefferson County is by law has its own health officer, and they can put mandates on its society that are even stricter than the state because they have, it's like they're a little mini nation to themselves when it comes to pandemics.
I say with Mobile as
that's
well.
That's got to change.
Right. That they operate independently of the state.
And they do. And that's, we've already had the AG have to remind Birmingham that you're overreaching. And that's got to change.
But a lot of that's just a product of the way we do legislation under the Alabama Constitution, that you have local bills, that did local, because not everything, it may require an act of the state, but that you have this carve-out for local legislation. Is that part of it?
That may be a part of it, yeah, because at some point someone thought this would be a neat idea for Birmingham, Jefferson County, and so they probably passed a local bill that established this position. And if it can be enacted, it can be basically unenacted, and so they're going to have to repeal something that was put in place in the past. So that's got to change, and so we're advocating for that change.
You know, traditionally in Alabama, you haven't had an all-powerful executive. That you know, and you served in the state senate. You're aware of this. That the governor, compared to a lot of other states, isn't as powerful of an office as it might be. I don't know. Maybe some of these more left-leaning states, but. Here lately, does it seem like the executive is kind of moving up, that the executive is getting back some of that power that maybe it had lost over time?
It may be, because I think one of the things you've seen is, in terms of executive, let's take it off of state level and to talk about municipal. Did anybody around the nation think much about your mayoral races before the pandemic? Well, you better be thinking now, because you look around the state, you can find a vast difference in the way Mayor Stimson has handled things from the way Mayor Woodfin has handled them, or the way Mayor Reed in Montgomery is handling them, and versus the mayor of Dothan, Walt Maddox, being a liberal Democrat, is the mayor of Tuscaloosa, and you see it differently. I mean, look right now around the nation. Just this morning, it was reported that the mayor of Los Angeles has said if he decides that you have gatherings at your house or business that are too large, then he's going to wind up shutting off your utilities as punishment for doing so. Shutting off people's water and power in the midst of the summer heat in California because he decided you were doing something wrong. So yeah, people better watch the executive power of the mayors and recognize who they put in those offices too.
But that's what we want, right? We want local control. We were talking just about the one-size-fits-all approach of the state. We might prefer it be done. I mean, I guess the question is, is a state capable of doing a whatever measure custom made for each local municipality, or do you just leave it up to municipal civic leaders to make those determinations?
I think it's going to wind up being, there's a cause and effect here. Only the governor could call out the National Guard. All right, there's one example. You don't want mayors calling out National Guards. But then there's also things that devolve to the local level. And a mayor himself, herself, still has to typically act within the bounds of what the council and the mayor will do together. And yet what you're seeing is the executives of different cities grabbing power that may have never been there for them to begin with, or people didn't realize they had it, and it's centralized in one person. And so even at the municipal level, the councils and the citizens need to speak, and they need to watch who they elect. Because when you put a liberal in a mayoral office, it's not just so they can do neat things and get good taxes for education and all that kind of stuff. No, they're going to shut down your business. We've got right now a situation in Montgomery where Mayor Reed has a hotline where you can call and report businesses who he thinks are out of line with the mask mandate, and then lose their licenses for not being incongruent. I mean, so what we're looking at here is, yeah, the executive at state and mayoral level all have to be examined and held accountable, and you need to elect the right kind of people for those jobs.
Well, on the other side of this question, you have some sheriffs in Blount County. Matt Moon, the sheriff there, he's not enforcing the mask mandate, and he was not going to enforce the shutdown order back in April, where you have these local officials that are kind of bucking the trend or whatever the governor and the state health officers say. That seems to be a problem as well.
It does, and so, for instance, all of the issues related to the shutdown, you had the mayor of Heflin early, I think it was Heflin, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, I think back in March or April when the economic shutdown really hit and all the stay-at-home order was put in place, the mayor of Heflin said, why am I having to do this when I can see my community? And we only had one reported case so far in my county, and yet now all of my tax revenue is being shut off because somebody in Montgomery decided to do so. And so, yeah, there's the questions and the answers have to go back and forth, and the debate will always be, do you centralize the control or do you allow it to devolve to the local level? To the extent possible, locals need to speak. But at the same time, don't ever vest all your power in one, whether it be local or state, because when you do, you're subject to the whims of that one. And so right now, the mayor, the town council, all need to speak to the governor and the legislature. But right now, the governor herself is the only one who's making these decisions.
Hey, Senator, we've got to leave it there. Real quick before I let you go, all the cool stuff y'all are doing, podcast and giving these positions on these issues of the day to Alabama Policy Institute. Tell folks where they could go find that.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate that. Folks can find us at www.alabamapolicy.org. We're a conservative think tank, and we've got plenty to equip you. And we're also on Twitter at Alabama Policy, and I'm there at Sen Phil Williams. So thanks much.
Senator, thank you. We'll do it again real soon.
All right, Jeff. Take care.
All right. That was former State Senator Phil Williams, our fellow at the Alabama Policy Institute. We got to take a time out. So come back. We'll wrap it all up. This is FM Talk 106.5.
You work a 40-hour week for a living, just to send it on down the line. Hello, West Virginia coal miner, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living, just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.